everybody. Welcome back to the Peace and Liberty podcast. Sorry for all the breaks I've been taking, but I've been pretty much nonstop traveling for the past 2 months, and it's great to be able to settle down. If you can, donate to me on patreon.com/thepeaceandlibertypodcast, and I'll also announce that I plan on doing the show Monday, Wednesday, Friday from now on. But anyways, it's good to be back from the Mises Institute. It was an amazing week. I met so many great people who are now lifelong friends to me. And I just have to say, I have a lot of friends who are wondering how to get a scholarship there. My response is this. One, are you in school? And if not, do you have a degree? And if you said no to both, then try to make some connections with people, whether it be the faculty or people who are closely related to the Institute. Just reach out to people. Now, they do give a few scholarships to quote-unquote professionals. And honestly, I'm 26 years old myself and feel like I'm old, but some of my friends in their 30s feel like it's impossible to get involved, get back in school, etc. Stop telling yourself that. I'll be the first to say that's nonsense. Look, Mises was 58 years old when he married his wife. Another random example, Colonel Sanders was 52 years old when the first KFC was established. And if I remember correctly, it wasn't until he was in his 70s that KFC saw great success. So stop thinking you're out of time or missed your opportunity. The opportunity is right in front of you. Just go take them. So today I thought I'd talk about the old utopian socialists, because when you think about the origins of socialist thought, most people would think of Marx and Engels. Now, Marx and Engels developed what they called scientific socialism, and this was first coined by Proudhon in 1840. And in 1880, Engels used this to describe Marx's political and economic views. The idea is this, that their historical analysis, rather than being based on emotion, was based on science and the scientific method. So, for example, Marx would argue that rather than socialism being an idea that could come into existence, it was something that's gonna happen. It really doesn't matter if you're a skeptical socialist that thinks it's unrealistic in practice. No. Marx looked at, for example, the transformation from, say, the Stone Age to the Bronze Age to the Iron Age, and fast-forwarding to, say, a capitalist society transforming into a feudalist society transforming into a capitalist society. He thought socialism was the next step. He thought workers are going to rise up and revolt because they'll refuse to work for such little profits. Marx also thought that the rate of profits of capitalists would decline slowly over time, leading to the constant lowering of wages. Again, it wasn't as if Marx thought, okay, we'll get to socialism by following step 1, 2, 3, 4, etc. He thought socialism was going to occur. There's no important point in even wasting time thinking about it. Now, of course, there is the question of, if people like Marx and Keynes had lived longer, would they have realized how wrong they were? Looking around today, obviously capitalism isn't on the verge of collapse. There's no doubt that socialism is ever more present on college campuses and among the intellectual elite, but the idea that we're about to see the collective of all workers rise up in revolt is just nonsense. At most, you'd see workers at one factory or wherever it may occur, and it would be a news story, and then it would be forgotten. So it's kind of hard to ignore that socialism relies on the masses revolting all at once. It's no wonder near the end of Marx's life that he would study random subjects like chemistry because he couldn't solve the fundamental problems in his theories. And few people know that, but for volume one of Das Kapital, it was published in 1867. And then Marx died in 1883, before the other two volumes came out. It was actually Engels who was sitting on Marx's footnotes that put out the other two volumes. And just to reiterate, Marx did not solve the transformation problem among many contradictions in his philosophy. A good book you can read on that is titled Marx and the Close of a System by Eugen Boehm-Bawerk. His name's a tough name to say, Eugen Boehm-Bawerk. And he just demolishes Marx. It's a systematic destruction of all his points. But I'll jump into the discussion for today, which is about utopian socialists. The point of my little rant there before was so you can have a real good laugh in regards to what you're about to hear next. Now, I'm going to keep it a short episode, but I figured I'd go over a few of the utopian socialists, such as Henry St. Simon, who had disdain for what he called the idling class, or in other words, just lazy capitalists who happen to have money and they're able to now sit around and do nothing while the employers do all the work. That came from St. Simon. Robert Owen was another one. He was actually a successful businessman and attempted to set up his own Owenite society in Indiana. Funny enough, that collapsed when one of his business partners ran off with all the profits. It turns out it's hard to continue on without those dirty profits. Now, Charles Fourier, who is my personal favorite, where do you even start? I need to give credit to Joe Salerno, who gave a great lecture. He gives this lecture every year at the Mises Institute, and I'll link to it below, on calculation and socialism. But if you've been wondering, man, there must be some kind of humiliating material that arose from the socialist movement, this one guy alone is like a gold mine in that respect. Supposedly, he was the guy who coined the term feminism in 1837, and that's something I randomly read earlier. It should be verified, but not surprising if true. He was born in 1772 in France, born to a small businessman. And by the way, it's hard to overlook that almost all the notable socialists made their livings off the back of capitalists. Even Marx, for example, survived on donations from Engels, which came from Engels' father's factory. Marx quite literally lived off the backs of toiled and exploited workers. It's not even a coincidence at this point. But anyways, Fourier, growing up, he wanted to become an engineer. But later on, he noted that he's glad he didn't do that because now he'll have more time to help humanity. Of course, the inventions or discoveries he could have made in the field of engineering, which actually could have helped humanity, were of little concern to him and would have, and he would help humanity through communication, I guess. What else? When his father died in 1781, he received 2/5 of his father's estate. And funny enough, one of Marx's planks in the Communist Manifesto is to do away with the right to inheritance. So poor Charles would have never had the chance to live this extravagant life, at least in the short run. And he's on record for having traveled all over in those following years. So it can be assumed he wasted all that money. Now here's the best part. The things he actually said, brace yourself. He argued that the ideal world he was helping to create would last 80,000 years, 8,000 of them in an era of perfect harmony in which, again, brace yourself, androgynous plants would copulate or have sexual intercourse. 6 moons would orbit the Earth. The North Pole would be milder than the Mediterranean. The seas would lose their salt and become oceans of lemonade. The world would contain 37 million poets equal to Homer, 37 million mathematicians equal to Newton, and 37 million dramatists equal to Molière, although these are approximate estimates. He also argued that every woman would have 4 lovers or husbands simultaneously. So you kind of get why Marx wanted to disassociate with these nut jobs and create an ideology that's supposedly scientifically based. And one last thing I'll point out, and again, this is common among socialists, that they can create these communist societies and they'll flourish as a matter of fact. Well, Fourier had this idea of a phalanstery, which ideally consisted of 500 to 2,000 people working together in a little society, and they'd live in these buildings designed for the purpose. These actually exist all around the U.S. and around the world for that matter, but most of them look like ghost towns today because obviously none of them worked. And you can just Google some of these places and you'll see what I mean. Well, I hope you all enjoyed this bit of information. I'll put it on an episode tomorrow. And then from there, I'll be back on a Monday, Wednesday schedule, Friday schedule until further notice. If I ever have a buildup of episodes, I'll absolutely put out 5 a week. But I'm about to start the most difficult college semester of my life and have to find a balance there. But I appreciate all the support and all the things people reach out to me and say. None of it goes unnoticed. And like I mentioned in the beginning of the show, there are opportunities right in front of us all, and it's just up to us to take them. So the message of peace and liberty won't spread itself. I'll see you all back tomorrow, and we'll do it again. As always, for peace and liberty.